Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, May 17th, 2021. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded and we do place all the meeting audios on our website. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone. You can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can raise virtual hands by pressing *9, and *9 again will lower your virtual. Everyone joining through video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. If you go under reactions, you can raise or lower your virtual hands by clicking on the hand icon. I would appreciate if we can have everyone state their name first before they make comments. We, as you all, we have interpreters with us on this call. It helps them do their job well. It also helps everyone listening to the audio afterwards knowing who is the speaker. So thank you for that. Excuse me. At this point, I would go ahead and read the agenda for today. After the agenda, I would go through the attendance for all the AAC members. Before going reading the agenda, I would share my screen for everyone to see the agenda who can, for the convenience of everyone. So give me just a quick. And I'm hoping that people who can see can view my screen at this point. We will go through all of the AAC members after I finish reading the agenda. We will review and approve the meeting minutes of last month's minutes and approve the agenda for the meeting. At 4:10, we will have customer service and outreach reports. At 4:15, we will have Michael Wilson Award and Rush Award, if any. I believe that's been deferred to in-person meetings. 4:20, we will have information about Metro Access work plan, flat fare versus fare calculator, and Mr. Christian Lake will give us information. At 4:50, Tarian Williams provide us with an update about, safety, cleanliness, COVID-related, that's COVID-related topic. Mr. Blake will, give us an update about the Metro Access sedan at 5:05, at 5:20. The topic is Metro Access audio recording discussion. And that would be led by AAC leadership and Mr. Blake. At 5:30, Mr. Blake will give us an update about abilities ride. 5:35, we have the public comment period. And at 6 p.m., the meeting will adjourn. At this point, I will stop sharing my screen. As stated before, I will go ahead and take the agenda roll call for AAC members. Elver Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush.
Present.
Thank you. Tino Calabio. Vanessa Coles. Vanessa is on the call with us. Rico Dancy.
Yes, this is Rico, present.
Thank you.
Deborah present. And good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Melanie Jackson. Steve Caffin. Mary Kay McMahon. Philippa Mazzell. Anthony Oberg. Phil Posner. Doris Ray.
Here.
Thank you. Denise Rush. Ms. Rush is on the call with us. Paul Semaphore.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
I owe you a call, Anu. I missed our last meeting. Sorry about that.
Yeah, Philippa is here. Couldn't get my unmute.
Okay, that concludes the call for today's meeting. I would ask Chair Semaphore to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you. So we did the call to order, roll call. Now we're going to review the agenda and minutes from the prior meeting.
Okay, so, could you hear me? Philippa is here.
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're reviewing the agenda here. It's a fully packed agenda. Are there any additions? The only thing I will add is about the strike that occurred at the OCC on Friday, and talk about that very briefly. I'll stick it towards the end of the agenda if we have time with this full plate agenda. Beyond that, are there any other additions to this agenda with already fully packed with other topics? Hearing none, can I have someone move the agenda with the one little item amendment?
So moved, Darnese, so moved.
Thank you. All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions, the motion carries to move the agenda as amended with the one extra item on it. Next will be the agenda from last month. From the month of April. Are there any additions to or suggestions or anything else that needs to be added to the minutes from April of 2021? Hearing the crickets, can I get someone to move the minutes as is?
Arnie, so moved.
Can I get a second? All right. All those in favor, thank you. Thank you, Doris. All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Abstentions. The motion carries to move the minutes as they were written in as is. So next is going to be customer service and outreach reports. Ms. Anderson and her wonderful crew.
Good afternoon. My name is Allison Anderson with Metro Access. At this time, I'd like to present Ms. Kay Clark with MTM to give the public comment report from our last session.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Good afternoon, everyone. For the April AAC and Metro Access subcommittee meetings, there were no operational issues presented via public comment for follow-up and resolution. Other comments made were addressed at the meeting and which the comments were raised. Metro Access received a total of 266 commendations for April 2021, and they are as follows. Diamond Transportation had 81, TransDev 64, MV 51, First Transit 44, Challenger 24, Eligibility 1, Uber 1, and MTM 1. Again, a total of 266 for the month. Now, we did have a comment from the May 2021 AAC meeting. A Metro Access customer raised two operational concerns that the Metro Access subcommittee asked to be briefed on. The first, the customer reported the driver she had on her trip home on 4/23 seemed to be quite nervous, and she thought she was a new driver. The driver did not seem to know what they were doing according to the customer, and she reported she was almost dumped out of her wheelchair. The reported event on 4/23/21, as communicated by the customer, was investigated. The operator who performed the trip has been in search for approximately 3 years, and the search provider was made aware of the concerns regarding vehicle lift operation and promptly conducted a review. Operator lift certifications take place once a year. The operator involved in this event passed their certification in June of 2020, and their yearly lift operation certification is scheduled for June of 2021. However, as a precautionary measure, the operator was counseled on what could have been done to handle the reported situation. The same customer had another comment that fell within investigation. The customer reported her trip on 4/29/21 from work to home was with a driver who she reports did not seem to know how to work the lift. She states she had to let herself down from the lift. The reported event of 4/29/21, as communicated by the customer, was investigated. The operator involved in the 4/29 reported incident is no longer employed with the service delivery provider, and no reason was given for the separation. From the video footage reviewed, Metro Access Management did see the lift plate was not completely vertical, and that may have been what the operator was concerned about. The lift was checked and not found to be inoperable. Metro Access Management asks all customers to never attempt to operate the wheelchair lift in an attempt to self-exit a vehicle, given the potential negative consequences. Metro Access's operation manager, Allison Anderson, contacted the customer to share the investigation findings and resolution actions. This is the end of the public comment report for today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And also, Mr. Semaford, we do not have any outreach to report on as of this session.
All right, thank you. So is there a Michael Wilson Award recipient? I know with Ms. Rush, there is that will resume when it's in person.
Yes, we do have a Michael Wilson Award recipient this afternoon. It is my pleasure to present Will Ford, who's the general manager with First Transit. So Will, take it away.
Hello everyone, how's everybody? Unfortunately, Mr. Washington wasn't able to make it today, but we are going to present this to his award to him this upcoming Saturday at our employee appreciation event. But Mr. Washington joined our team in 2017. He's always been an operator at our location. Someone with a great devotion of being a noteworthy team member here at our location. Since 2018, he's had zero drive cam conducts or safety complaints. He's considered our top three driver since 2018. Outside of work, Willie does not hesitate to share anyone that he's devoted husband to his gorgeous wife of 15 years and an incredibly involved father to his seven beautiful kids. He is submitted to his to riding his bike when his day's off and enjoys traveling out of the country. We feel that no one deserves it more than him currently right now. He's devoted to our location. Since this pandemic, he's had zero attendance infractions at our location, has came to work each and every day, as well as continuously picking up additional shifts to support the location. So we just want to thank him. And we'll provide them that insight this upcoming Saturday as well.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ford. That's wonderful. And please share our congratulations with Mr. Washington.
Will do.
And his dedication. So with that, Mr. Summerford, I think that concludes our report and the Michael Wilson recognition for this afternoon.
All right. Thank you so much. Next will be... we're going to have a discussion about the flat fare versus fare calculator with Mr. Blake.
Okay, so good afternoon, everybody, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's just start with what prompted this is how are Metro Access fares calculated? Metro Access fare policy is in strict alignment with the Americans with Disabilities Act, in that Metro Access fares are calculated as twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare. What does this mean? In easy, simple terms, if the equivalent trip to a Metro Access requested trip has bus only option or options, meaning there is no Metro Rail involved in the fastest equivalent trip, So for example, and I'm just picking some places that I think I might be right in this, is that a trip from Upper Marlboro to Fort Washington, I don't believe there's any rail component in that. That trip on Metro Bus would be $2. Therefore, that trip on Metro Access, twice the fastest fare, would be $4. If the equivalent trip to Metro Access to a Metro Access requested trip has a rail aspect to it, then your Metro Access fare will be between $4 and $6.50. Meaning, if you're taking a trip from New Carrollton to downtown Washington, D.C., well, there's clearly an option for a non-Metro Access passenger to use Metro Rail. They'll take New Carrollton on the Orange Line and transfer and do all that good stuff. So that fare is going to be somewhere between $4 and $6.50. Oh, excuse me, I did leave out something at the beginning. Twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare with a maximum fare of $6.50. So the most you could ever pay on Metro Access is $6.50 for now. And therefore, if your fixed route equivalent trip, and by now we should all know what fixed route equivalent is because I've been talking about it now for 3 years. If your fixed route equivalent trip has a rail component, then that fare is going to be somewhere between $4 and $6.50. That's the basic. That's the basic Metro Access fare structure. Twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare with a maximum fare of $6.50. But, and again, long before, well, I won't say long, because I was at least sitting in the room listening to the conversation, but before Chris Blake took over the Metro Access operation part of it, the AAC and the leadership of the Department of Access Services worked on in response to concerns about, for the lack of a better word, ever increasing Metro Access fares, worked on a solution called the Metro Access Fare Calculator. Now, the Metro Access Fare Calculator is programmed to look across a window to find the lowest available fare. That means even if your trip has a rail option, but the window the fare calculator is using finds a bus-only option, your Metro Access fare would be $4 instead of somewhere between $4 and $6.50. That's not a guarantee to you. Metro has never guaranteed that you will always get the lowest fare. The Metro Access Fare Calculator is a computer program. It's designed to look for the lowest fare, and that's what it generally does and is successful at it. But your fare as a Metro Access customer, automatically you should assume that if my trip is bus only, if my fixed route equivalent trip is bus only, my Metro Access fare is going to be $4. If my trip has a rail component, my Metro Access fare is going to be between $4 and $6.50. If it's a long trip that includes rail, then you should say it's going to be $6.50. However, if the Metro Access fare calculator finds a trip that's lower than that, that's a good thing. And that's what the staff and the AAC agreed to several years ago and has been the way we've been calculating fares ever since. So that's the basics of the fare. Bus only equivalent trip, you pay $4. Rail included in your trip, you pay somewhere between $4 and $6.50. But if the Metro Access fare calculator can find a lower fare, you may not pay the highest fare that you otherwise would have paid under federal law. What the AAC is considering to advocate for now, which Metro Access Management and Department of Access Service Management is not opposed to or not expressing opposition to the advocacy or the position, is a flat fare. So that we remove the language of twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare, we remove the fare calculator and just charge one fare for every Metro Access trip. If that happens, great. I know it makes the life of the call center a lot easier. It probably makes my life trying to explain it to customers a lot easier. We're not pushing it. I'll be transparent. I'm not pushing this as a thing to do, but you know, as they say, silence is golden. And in this case, we're being very silent and allowing the AAC to advocate for the introduction of a Metro Access platform. So with that, I'll answer any questions you may have.
So, I already see hands raised. I see Miss Rush, I see Darnese, I see Doris Ray, I see Mr. Torres, and Anu, start keeping tabs for me, but we'll start with these four people from the hands I see raised. So we're gonna start in this order. Ms. Yes. Rush, followed by Darnese, followed by Doris, and followed by Mr. Torres. Please try to keep your comments to 2 minutes, since there will probably be many speakers. And succinct and to the point.
Okay, this is Denise Rush. In your explanation of what you just stated, you didn't talk about the timing, because you can ask for a trip at 2 o'clock and you might get $4. But if you ask for it at 2:20 or 2:30, you will get $6.50. So it's confusing to the customer, the timing of when you put in what you want for your request. The amount changes before your eyes.
Right, and what you're referring to, Ms. Rush, and Ms. Rush is absolutely correct. She uses the afternoon example, and I'll add to the afternoon example, the morning example. If you book a trip at 9:30, I believe that's still in the peak time, your fare is probably going to be $6.50. Whereas if you book a trip at 10 o'clock, your fare is probably going to be $4. So what Ms. Rush is referring to is the peak time. And yes, there is a higher price for those peak time mornings and peak time in the evenings. Early morning is cheaper, midday is cheaper, late evening is cheaper. But in the peak time in the morning and the peak time in the afternoon, those are higher fares on fixed route service, which then results in higher fares on Metro Access.
And the customer gets confused because they go to the doctor at 2 o'clock and it might be $4, and they pick them up from the doctors at
2:30,
at 5 o'clock or whatever, and it's gone up to $6.50. Well, because
we're now in the peak time, and so if that customer, so we got to take it. Let's take it out of Metro Access for a second. If that same customer was not eligible for Metro Access, because Chris and Glenn were on the appeal panel and we overruled Denise Rush, for example. Let's just say if that customer wasn't on Metro Access, that same customer would have paid one fare on rail going there, but would have paid a higher fare on rail going back home. And that higher fare on rail is then reflected in the Metro Access price.
Well, that is what is so confusing to customers, and that's why we really, the AAC, really wants a flat rate. So you can do a budget. You can't budget if you're on a fixed income, what time you got to travel. If you know every trip you have is $4 or $5, you know it's $5. When it jumps up to $6.50 on a fixed income, that's major.
I agree with you, Ms. Rush, but the only thing I would say, I'm not disagreeing with you, so just hear me, I'm agreeing with you, but keep in mind, and again, if the AAC is successful at securing a flat fare, Metro Access Management, Department of Access Services, we're with you, we support you. But that same example you used about a fixed income applies to people who don't have disabilities and are not eligible for Metro Access. So they also have their transportation on rail. It's cheaper in the it's cheaper in the midday, and it's more expensive in that peak time afternoon. So they're going through the same thing in terms of being on a fixed income and having to use a service with a fluctuating price.
To the next person, there's a whole line of people here.
I see.
Darnice, you're okay. Next, followed by Doris.
Okay, Darnice. This is the follow-up basically on what Ms. Rush is saying, because it's confusing. My problem is that almost every ride in the District of Columbia is $6.50, and especially for people that live in wards 5, 7, and 8, because they have to catch the bus first before they catch the rail in most cases. So I guess it's calculated on that.
Yes, ma'am. And for those who with visual disabilities, I'm nodding as Ms. Bush is speaking, because she's absolutely right. Yes.
I agree that it should be a flat fee. I mean, because, you know, I think it's unfair that DC is always, you're actually going probably the shortest amount of distance, but paying the most fare because of the way the subway and the bus system is set up.
And Ms. Bush has a valid point. That trip from Upper Marlboro to New Carrollton, I'm just picking New Carrollton because I know, but that might not be the best example. Certainly could be a trip far longer than, let's say, Southeast DC to the Metro headquarters. But it would only be $4 in Prince George's County, where it would be $6.50 in DC because of the rail component.
Right.
So you have a good point there. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm sort of agreeing with you, but I'm not using that agreement to state we support a flat fare. I'm just giving you, yes, ma'am. Okay.
So,
but advocate. That's all I'm saying.
My only other thing is, when is the calculator used? So the calculator is not used during peak times.
No, it's used all times, but now if you pick a trip like right in the middle of the peak window, there's no way, because the window is only 15 minutes on each side, so there's no way that the calculator is going to reach out to a non-peak fare. But if you pick a time like 9:46, well, now you have an option, there's a potential opportunity for the fare calculator to find a trip that is lower cost than the peak time fare, and they would give you the lower fare.
Well, I just want to add one thing. Mm-hmm. I'm really for the flat fee, because it's really difficult for people to understand. But I'm also for a discount thing for Metro Access, because people have to ride. Some people ride to go to work every day, and so they could get a discount card or a flat fee card or something, so that they could have a set fare. And that's my statement. You don't have to respond.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
It's going to be part of the record.
Next is going to be Doris Ray, followed by Ansel Torres, and then by Sonia Torres, in that order. So, Doris?
Okay. Two questions. One, a question about the calculator, and then a very quick question about the flat fee. And the question about the calculator is, as an example, if I am going from, say, the Seven Corners and or the City of Falls Church area, and I'm going up to Fairfax County Government Center. If I wanted to use the calculator, both of those routes parallel the subway, and you could get on the subway. But in one case, you could take, instead of the B bus, to Dunloring and then get on another bus that goes out to Fair Oaks Mall and then get on a connector and you're at the government center. Or in the other case, you could take the 1A and 1C, you know, all the way out, or you could get on the subway. So is it going to automatically calculate bus to bus, or will it force me, will it forcibly say the quicker route is using the subway and therefore give me the $650?
It will, the way it's designed is designed to always look for the fastest route.
Right, so, I get that, so, but how is it? I mean, if you spend an hour and a half on a bus.
Well, you look at the world-class trip planner, and the trip planner gives you the fastest route as well as other alternatives. So you look at that, it's not the fare calculator making it up. We're using the world-class trip planner that tells us what is the fastest route. What is the fastest equivalent route for the time Doris wants to go from Seven Corners to the Fairfax government office? If it happens to be, even though it's parallel to the train, and we know that the train can adjust times and do certain things, if it happens to be that even though you'll be driving alongside the rail, but because of the time you've chosen to travel, the fastest route is actually a bus, then you will get the bus fare. But the trip planner, the best way for you to know that answer, respectfully, Chris Blake doesn't have that answer per se. If you go into the trip planner,
does it calculate GPS for the day or, you know, the timing of the traffic lights?
No, that's not what the calculator does. The calculator is using the world-class trip planner. And if you go in there and look at the times you want to go from Seven Corners to Fairfax, what is the fare calculator, what is the trip planner returning as being the fastest trip, fastest way to get there?
Well, I will agree with the two previous speakers that actually that is very complex for even me, let alone any consumer who's not sat on this committee and heard the presentations. But the second question is with regard to the flat fare. And that is, I've heard you say the staff is going to stay neutral until the AAC does its advocacy and the board either accepts that or doesn't. But if you're standing at the WMATA board meeting or the finance meeting or the chair or a board member asks you the question, which would the staff prefer? Will you say we're neutral, or would you say would you express an opinion?
Well, fortunately, I'm not that important. I don't think the board's going to call me and
ask me. I don't know.
Well, let's put it this way, though. If there was a board meeting this Thursday, and somebody came and called me and asked to come in front of the board and express an opinion, my opinion would say, at this moment, I would say, we support the advocacy and the position of the AAC, and we would not be opposed to the position being advocated by the AAC. And I think that's as strong as I would push it. But again, the fact that we're quiet on this, if you will, some people are going to take note of that and take it for what that is.
All right, thank you, Doris. Okay, we still got other people.
As you know, when Metro Access or Access Department is opposed to something, I think you've seen we can be pretty vocal about opposition.
All right, so Doris, we do need to get the other people. There's a whole list of people here.
That was my question.
Okay, thank
you. Those were my questions.
So next is going to be Ansel Torres, followed by Sonia Torres, and behind Sonia is going to be Patrick Sheehan. Go, Ansel.
Hello, this is Ansel Torres. Before I get started with my comments, I'd like to ask, of the AAC members present, are any of you willing to confess that you understand the fare calculator at all? And if you were to be asked by a Metro Access rider like me to explain it, would you be able to do so? Is there anyone on the AAC that will be able to do this?
This is Darnice, Mr. Torres. I think that you know from our comments that none of us can explain it.
Right, well, I know from the speakers. Okay. All right. Fair enough. And of all the other riders that I know, all the people I've ridden with at Metro Access, all the people I know who are disabled that use Metro Access, none of them understand it. I believe that WMATA has a responsibility, just like the phone company, just like the cable companies, just like your energy companies have. They have a responsibility to ensure that their customers understand the bills that they do pay. Mr. Blake and I have had a very extensive exchange on this issue. So the comments that he's hearing me make here today are not going to be a surprise to him. And so he repeated to me exactly what he said to you about the fare. But our conversation deadlocked, where I was challenging him to have the fare calculator show me its work. You know, like when you did math in school, the teacher would say, I need you to not only solve this problem, but I need you to show me your work. Show me with specific detail how you came up with this answer. And Mr. Blake was not able to do that, or was unwilling to do that. All he could tell me is that the fare calculator came up with this price. So for example, the trip that I was using was a trip between my home and Sibley Hospital. So to get to Sibley Hospital at 8 o'clock at night, there is a bus only trip that will get me there in an hour. The bus rail combo gets me there in about an hour and a half. However, the fare that I paid was the bus rail combo fare of $6.50 instead of the $4, which I should have been charged because there is a bus route. So I said, well, what is the fare calculator basing it on? I couldn't find the trip that it was basing it on. I couldn't find a bus rail combo that got me there faster than the bus alone could get me there. So to me, that made absolutely no sense. And this calculator cannot be credible if we as passengers can't find the schedule that the fare calculator is using to come up with its pricing, okay? It is not reasonable for us to accept a fare calculation that we cannot replicate on our own. It's like, you know, we have this calculator that is supposed to be calculating our fare that we say, the fare calculator say, two and two is six. And we're saying, well, two and two is not six, two and two is four, the last time I checked. But the fare calculator says two and two is six, so you must pay six. That's what we're dealing with here. That is wrong. No one at WMATA has been able to explain this to me. I have gotten all kinds of bizarre explanations as to how this thing is done, and none of it makes sense. And I'd like to know, who is the authority at WMATA on this fare calculator business? Is it you, Mr. Blake? Is there somebody else at WMATA that is responsible for programming this mess? Because I believe the calculator is broken. It is horribly broken. And disabled passengers are being overcharged based on the policy that WMATA has in place. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Blake,
and then we'll go to Stone Gatori next. To a specific question, yes, I'm responsible for it right now. I'm not responsible for programming it, but because again, it was already in place, so it's a practice that we've had in place. It's designed to find a discounted fare. But again, if you're a member of the AAC, especially if you've been a member prior to Blake becoming managing director, I think there was plenty of time to sort of address this. But if you need an answer, I'll email you what the fare calculator is designed to do. You're paying twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare. And if the fare calculator can help you find a discount, it will, but the discount is not a guarantee. However, at this moment, yes, when you're in this role, you're responsible for the execution of the things below you, which is, again, if it makes life easy, the AAC and the advocates are not going to get any disagreement or hear any disagreements from Metro Access or Department of Access Services for a flat fare.
All right.
But Mr. Blake, are you willing to answer the question that I'm asking? Can you provide me with a specific calculation that the fare calculator came up with to calculate that specific fare that I asked you? Otherwise, if the fare calculator is the only thing that can find that schedule, you can't find the schedule. I can't find the schedule. The fare calculator is not giving you, it's not telling you which trips it's based on, then we have a rogue fare calculator.
Okay.
And that can't be acceptable.
Again, you and I can look at a trip, send me the trip, I'll look at it again. I thought we've addressed this, but again,
when I asked you to provide me with the
user. No, you asked me to provide you with the computer programming. No.
I asked you to provide me with the schedule that the fare calculator based my fare on.
Because using the trip planner,
I should be able to go to the trip planner and find the same trip that the fare calculator found.
And if the fare calculator
cannot find that fare, okay. then the fare calculator shouldn't be able to find it either.
I know it's going to be in the minutes, but if you want, in terms of saving time, because I won't see the minutes for a few weeks, but if you want to save some time, please email me the pickup time, the pickup address, drop-off address again, and let me see if I can find it.
Because that's what I was asking you for in the email exchange that we had, and all you were doing was just giving me a recital of the policy as opposed to an explanation of this calculation.
Okay, that's fair. Well, I'll take a look at it this time again.
Thank you, Mr. Torres. So next I see we have, first would be Sonia Torres next, and then Patrick Sheehan, and then Tejuan Farmer. Mm-hmm. If I'm saying the name correctly. So go, first would be Sonia, followed by Pat, and then Tejuan. If I said it correctly, please forgive me. All right, go, Sonia.
Yes, hi, this is Sonia Torres. Yeah, Mr. Blake, you were saying that the fare should be higher during the peak hour and lower during the non-peak hour, but that's not necessarily the case, because about 2 years ago, and this is still the truth, but 2 years ago I was taking a trip, and during the peak hour, morning time, my fare was $4, and then I was coming back the non-peak time, the fare jumped up to $6.50, and at that time I asked, you know, for an explanation, why is that so? And this person called back and said that it's due to, because, you know, at that time there was a train that was, you know, out for maintenance. And so that's why my fare, you know, was different. But even after 2 years ago, when I still check on that trip, is the same thing. In the morning time, which is the peak hour, I get a $4. And then when I want to come back off peak time, is $6.50. So, you know, it's still, what, the train is still out on maintenance, you know, so that's not true. You know, whenever we ask for explanations and things like that, just like everybody else, I have never been able to understand the fare calculator. It seems like you almost have to be a rocket scientist to understand this. So I advocate for the flat fare because I think the fare calculator is a mess. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and I would say I can't attest to who or what someone told you 2 years ago. I've never heard of fares being based on a train being out of service. I've heard of it being based on a schedule. But the example you're giving, and again, that's just in general. I don't know the pickup location or anything else, but the example you're giving is very much like the conversation I just had with Doris Ray, where Doris points out that there's a bus that runs parallel to a rail line, and it is quite possible that based on the time you want to be picked up, it just so happens, even though there's a rail right there, it just so happens that in the morning, in the middle of the peak, the fastest trip is on a bus, whereas coming back, the fastest trip is on a rail, which increases the price. So I never said, or please don't take my comments as saying every trip in the peak time is higher than every trip in the non-peak, because that's not the point we're making. Point we're making is, generally speaking, peak time fares on fixed route service, i.e. rail, are higher than peak time, than non-peak time. But again, if the fastest fixed route equivalent trip that you are selecting happens to be on a bus in the peak time, then you would get a lower fare, even though it's peak time. Whereas in the afternoon, because of the time you've selected and what's available, the fastest trip is on a rail, so your trip could be higher. We would have to look at the specific trip to see, but that is quite possible, although it doesn't happen that often, but it's quite possible. But we would have to look at the specific trip. But please, the key point in our conversation, let's just make sure it's not 100% either way. It's generally speaking, peak times are more expensive than off-peak times.
All right, thank you. Next, we're gonna have Patrick, and then followed by Tejuan Farmer and Deborah Fisher. So Pat, you're next.
Thank you, Paul, appreciate it. I guess I was around when this calculator was put together.
Yep.
I remember.
Have you figured it out, Pat? Tell me, have you figured it out?
There you go. I do remember, and I don't know why I remember this, that when you looked, and this is before a lot of the Silver Line happened.
Pat, you have a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah, there you go.
243,000 combinations.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And I also remember that we also then narrowed it down to the, so that it would pick the lowest fare amongst, I think it was 30 fares that it would come up with for a given scenario over a 30-minute period. So yeah, it's very complicated. If we're trying to get, and I think looking at the larger picture, if we are trying to encourage the use of the system, and I know it's focused mostly on bus and rail, that we need to make life simple. And as everyone else has said, if we can go with a fixed fare, that's a great idea. We don't know what the fixed fare is going to be because we're waiting for direction from the board on what that could possibly be. 243,000 connections. We've had it around for how many years? 15 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, and to make everybody feel really, really happy, is that I think Lamont also got an award for its the wonderful work on this fare calculator. But I agree, because I was out there. But I would agree with Ansel that you need to be able to run the numbers, show that the fare calculator is working based on trips and be able to show that information as accurate and be able to verify that individually. I don't have a problem with that. I think the time for the fare calculator has come and gone. I think that simplicity is going to help us get back, which is what they're talking about on the regular bus rail system. So I agree with that. But so if anybody wants to blame prior AAC attendance on the fare calculator, it seemed like a good idea at the time, but anyway, you know.
I would say if you know, having been in the meeting room, but you know, just on a accessibility compliance basis, I would say it was a good idea in the fact that Metro did not have to change its fare policy to be in strict alignment with the ADA, which was a goal,
right,
while still giving customers discounts on at least some trips. So the fare calculator, that's potentially one reason why it's so complicated, because they wanted to keep the fare policy as is, but still give customers some discounts, which was the AAC's goal.
Right.
So I would say, Patrick, the fare calculator was a good bridge towards a flat fare. So you all should be proud of your work and working with the staff. It took a lot of effort. We have colleagues. I know Sherry Collins was around then working on the procurement side to make it happen. It's complicated, but it's complicated because you're trying to put a square in a round hole, if you will. But it accomplished its goal, which is to give customers discounts on otherwise maximum fares. But as you say, time has come, and I think it was a nice bridge towards a flat fare. But in the meantime, I will still address Mr. Torres's question specifically, but I think the direction of this conversation and what the AAC is advocating for, the flat fare, is the direction you all should continue to go in a very strong and committed way.
And, all right. And remember that they pay Paul, and just to give it, you know, an enhancement that the fare calculator gave us was that out of the 30 possible fares that it could have picked, it has always selected the lowest fare amongst those 30 possible. So if your fare was $4.75 and you had in the 30-minute period a fare for $4.25, it will give you, according to theory, the $4.25 fare. And that was an enhancement that we looked for and asked for, because before this, it was more complicated than it is now. So you know, times are better than they were, believe it or not.
Thank you, Patrick. So next we have Tejuan Farmer. And again, this is related to the current topic, your comments only, followed by Deborah Fisher. And then we do need to move on to the next topic because we're getting close to 5 o'clock.
Paul, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Wonderful. It is Tawan.
Sorry.
So
I stand corrected.
No fault on your own. So for the most part, I echo what Mr. Torres and Mr. Sheehan said. What I think any consumer, whether they are a person with a disability or a non-Metro SS rider, wants is simply, much like my math teacher would say to me in school, show your work. I want to be able to say, okay, the fare calculator utilizes the world-class fare calculator, then I should be able to go into the fare calculator. If I ask a Metro Access representative, booking representative to give me a ideally give me a trip at 8:15 on any particular, on a given day, and it says, okay, we have a trip for you that's going to be between 8 and 8:30, and this is the cost. That means I should be able to go into that calculator, that fixed route calculator that the consumer uses, and be able to say, let me put in an 8 o'clock, an 8:15, an 8:30, and within that prescribed window, be able to find a trip that matches the cost and stats that are required, whether it's bus, rail, or whatever. Mm-hmm. I should be able to find that information. So the only thing I want is, as I said before, and redundancy is very popular, is to show me the work. And that's all I want to be able to see. And then I'm content.
So Mr. Farmer, I mean, you're not getting any disagreement from Metro Access staff on this. What I would say, and you know, I know you very well, so I would say if possible, I'm sure you could do it, I would go onto the trip planner, the world-class trip planner, as I call them. By the way, world-class is my description of it. I started that when I was at the MTA trying to get them to replicate what Washington had. So I always labeled it as the world-class trip planner, and I've never stopped. But I appreciate you using that terminology. If you go it's already 4:30. I would say go today or tomorrow and look on the trip planner. Just pick a time. Pick a time and pick a trip from your home to a destination. Even if you don't plan on going, I'm not saying call the OCC just to play on the telephones because they're doing real work. But if you want to try it out, that's the way you do it. I mean, you don't need me necessarily to help you get a visual of what the trip of what the calculator is attempting to do. The first thing you do is put in a trip on the world-class trip planner. See which one the trip planner says is the fastest trip. And if it's a rail trip that costs $375, then you know it's your Metro Access fare is $375 times two, but at a cap of $650. So that trip would be $650. And then you can call in and try to book that trip on Metro Access and see what the fare would be. I mean that's really the basics of all of this. The basic of all of this, and I tried to, in my conversations privately with Mr. Torres, we don't have to get into the details, but I mean, what I was basically trying to say is twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare with a maximum of $650. Hard stop. Don't confuse yourself with the fare calculator and all that other stuff. That's a discount. And it's a discount you're not guaranteed to, but again, because of the advocacy of the AAC and the work of staff and management and trying to help customers get a discount, it's been pretty reliable. But you should say to yourself, I've gone to the world-class trip planner, I've put in a trip, and I see that the fare is $650. That's how much, in my mind, Mr. Farmer should say, in your mind, how much my Metro Access fare is going to be for that trip, period. Just stop there. But then when you go and book your Metro Access trip, if your fare happens to come back at $525, $575, or just any number less than $650, the work of Patrick Sheehan and others has paid off for you. That's it's really that simple. I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. But if you go in there into the world-class trip planner and the price you see for the fastest trip is $2, meaning it's only bus, but then you call Metro Access for that same trip and they're charging you $650, there's a problem. But there's not a problem with the fare calculator. It's a problem with our calculation of the fare in general. We need to figure out why, according to the trip planner, the fastest trip is only bus, but Metro Access is charging you a trip that's bus and rail. That's kind of the point Mr. Torres was saying. So I would not make this so complicated that, oh my God, we're trying to figure out what this calculator is doing as to what is your baseline fare? Are you being charged the appropriate fare per the federal law, which is twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare, and it's calculated by our trip planner. If your $650 trip comes in at $525, Patrick Sheehan has saved you over $1. If your $4 trip is quoted to you at $5 or whatever, then you need to call me and I will get on. It's really that simple.
Thank you, sir.
I just say something here real quick, very short?
Okay, because we're at 5 o'clock here.
the fare that I sent you, the trip that I sent you did exactly that. What you just explained there, and I discussed this with Paul, full disclosure, that's exactly what's going on.
Okay, we're going to take a look at, you're going to send me the information.
Charge, a $650 charge.
Okay.
Is I'm being charged $650 when I should be paying $4.
Okay. You're going to send me the information again for a fresh conversation, because that other email.
I'll just pull up the same email conversation that we had and start again.
Okay, do that.
All right. So
all the details are still there.
Are still in there. Okay.
All right. So next is Deborah Fisher. Is she still with us?
I'm here. Thank you. So I'm new to all of this, so bear with me. And this may be somewhat of a devil's advocate. My concern is, and it's really perhaps a follow-on to what Mr. Blake was just talking about. My concern is that to go to a flat rate means that some large fraction of people will see their, will know, guarantee that their rates are going to go up because somewhere along the line, the flat rate is going to be some sort of an average. So my concern and question really is the solution to just go to a flat rate, or is the solution to figure out how to fix a problem that seems to be built into whether it's the algorithms or systems? I just have concerns that there's going to be, if, you know, my very superficial math would suggest that if you pick an average, half the people are going to see their fees rise. And that's not going to be much of a solution for folks on fixed incomes. And that doesn't really solve a problem. So if in
Let me jump in, Deborah. Can I say this? And Deborah Fisher is absolutely right in the point she's making, because if you heard earlier, the flat fare proposal, I think, was either $4.50 or $5. So for a lot of customers, that would be a rate, that would be a fair increase. So I'm going to put something on the record, probably get me terminated, because I've said we're staying out of this. The real advocacy in this, if you're going to say it, the real advocacy would be to say a flat fare of no more than twice the bus fare. That's really the real advocacy point there. Again, is that something staff is going to argue against? No. But is that something that will be accepted? I don't know. But to Deborah's point, and Ms. Fisher, I mean, you're absolutely right. Any flat fare above the bus fare is a rate increase for at least some passengers. And it's, you know, a pretty good number of passengers depending on where you live and where you're going. So I just wanted to throw that in there, Ms. Fisher. You're absolutely right. So AAC, I've given you, you know, a talking point. You don't necessarily have to quote me, even though it'd be in the minutes, but you don't have to quote me necessarily. But if you're gonna advocate for a flat fare, the only flat fare that will leave everyone harmless would be a flat fare that's no more twice than the fastest bus fare. And fact of the matter is, though, here's the other challenge with the flat fare and why it never really gained traction beforehand. Even if the AAC, in all your advocacy and caring about passengers, which you do, and you're the top notch of AACs in this region, and I go to all the meetings, even if you agreed and you stood and was firm, we support a flat fare of $4.50, well, guess what? The federal law says we can't charge more than twice the fastest fixed route fare, so it wouldn't necessarily be a flat fare. It'd be a flat fare for anything above $4.50. But if you're in Prince George's County and you're catching that trip from Upper Marlboro to New Carrollton, well, your fare would still be $4. So Ms. Fisher brought up a great point. So I'll stop there, and just so the AAC will know what you're asking for. And Ms. Fisher, if you want to continue.
No, that's my point. And then to add on, or do we say first, fix something that's broken, to Mr. Torres's point and others.
All right. So what I will do, because I do need to move to a lot of other agenda items, is I will put this again on next month's agenda so we can bring up more. Yes, because obviously there's more discussion, or I can put you down for public comment because I saw Doris's hand, but we do need to move on. So Doris, I'll put you down for public comment. Mr. Blake, looking at the agenda here, I would like to get a Metro Access sedan update. If we get to safety, we will. We don't, we'll do it next month. And also, I would like to get an update with abilities ride, and we'll take it from there. So first, sedans, have you here.
Just real quick, the sedans are still coming in, Ms. Williams-Hall, because I've lost track. Do you have the exact number that we have now? You're on mute, ma'am.
Hello, everyone. We're at just under 120.
Okay, 120. So that means we've got about 55 more to come, and then you'll be seeing a new solicitation for 50 more coming up. And we'll talk about that solicitation as it becomes comes into fruition. And then, so that's really the nut and bolts on the sedans. But then you had another question. Oh, abilities ride, just real quick.
Let's go back to the sedan. The other issue that you still haven't resolved with your staff, Mr. Blake, as we told you the last time you're going to discuss, is about locking that child, that door with the safety lock.
Oh, I think,
because that was a concern with the committee, and you were going to talk to your staff and come back to us at this meeting or future meeting to give us, what the word is.
Well, Ms. Williams-Hall, do you want to, can you confirm that we're not going to be using the child safety lock going forward?
That is the position that we took and shared with our service delivery providers.
Okay. So Ms. Williams-Hall, when was this discussed? Because I've been riding a lot of sedans over the past couple of days, and some do it and some don't. So as I look at the service providers, if that's the case, I would strongly please tell the drivers not to put the safety locks on because it's still being done.
Well, and that's fair.
Reiterate that right now, Mr. Chairman.
And Thank you for reporting it for us.
And I'll be happy to be texting Mr. Blake every single ride that's on a sedan that they still keep doing it if that's the policy and standard as of this point.
Okay. No matter the day or time, huh?
Okay. Any quick questions from customers about that topic with the sedan? As you heard for the record, that it the child safety locks will no longer be deployed.
Thank you. That's it. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Back to you, Mr. Blake, about the abilities ride update. So we've seen an uptick in trips, and we've seen in some extremist cases that abilities ride have been used for extreme cases. So how are things looking with, as I look at the numbers here, the number of trips are going back up slowly. And how it's being deployed in some of those cases.
Okay, so I wouldn't say in extreme cases. What this is as an example is, as we've talked about, we did it in December, we did it again kind of in April, maybe in February. We want to keep the companies engaged. There's some challenges with everybody because of this economy. I have, since I'm working from my home office, whether it's in Florida or Maryland, I have some extra time, so I don't mind helping facilitate some trips. And just so you know, when it comes to with Uber, because just like with members of this committee, including a member, not a member of the committee, but a member of the public who spoke earlier, but I also started with everybody with the committee, the same way I've worked with you all in trying out different technology solutions, particularly with Uber. Now we're trying some of those technology solutions with people who don't know me the way some of you all know me. They don't have my cell phone number. They don't call me in the middle of the night. They don't call me in the middle of the day when something goes wrong. I want to be able to begin to transfer knowledge and get experience from various customers who don't have a relationship with me to see how utilizing some of these services work when they're not AAC participants, when they're not regular callers to my office. And so that's what you're seeing. You're seeing us take advantage of a little bit of increase in ridership overall, and therefore taking advantage of this opportunity to try out different things within the abilities ride spectrum. Are we back to full abilities ride yet? No. And I think it's going to be quite a while before that comes back around. But we're going to continue to engage in those contractors because their drivers need the work. They need to continue to practice and be good in understanding the difference between serving customers with disabilities and being conscious of that at all times, as opposed to just being regular taxi drivers, if you will, for the lack of, not in an insulting way, but just, we want them to have a special attitude when they're serving all customers, but especially the customers who are being subsidized by Metro. So yes, we're taking advantage of this opportunity, but nothing I'm doing with these customers who I have no relationship with, but trying to see how knowledge is transferred has not been tried first and foremost with members of the AAC or regular participants of the AAC.
So this is my understanding, like as I'm going back to abilities rights. So I've had five trips where staff from the OCC have approached me because they're extremely late trips and putting them on Uber. So what I was getting from you as we talk about abilities, right, is that the policy they're using right now, like being 20, 30 minutes late, and there's really not much any other options but to wait for the vehicle, or if you're able to use it, use that.
Okay.
That has happened.
That has happened, yes. And that's a way to get people to try it. And then the people who took those trips, unless I knew you, unless I saw your name on the list, people who took trips like that became the customers who I then sent bulk text message to and asked them if they would try more of these trips so we could try out this ability to upload trips as well as ability to send them what we call flexible trips. And flexible trips just means that we don't tell Uber what time to pick a customer up. The customer uses technology to summon the Uber when they're ready to be picked up. And just so happen, if they choose not to ride that day, and the trip is, you know, goes away, there's no penalty. There's no late cancels or anything like that. So we're trying some different things, but as a hard policy, no. That's a way of getting engaged with customers who I don't have a personal relationship with. But if you had a trip today and your trip was excessively late, you would not have been offered a Uber trip today. So it's not a hard and fast policy. It's a policy we use here and there, and maybe going forward, if we think it's a good policy overall, we may implement it as a more permanent policy, but it's not something you should count on or expect to see every time you have an excessively late trip.
Okay.
But the only reason you're not on the pilot is because you've already piloted everything we're trying with these other individuals. You've done it before, and plus, you know me. These are people I have no knowledge of who they are, and we're trying to see how good can they use Uber? How good can they use Yellow Cab? How good can they use, you know, Action Taxi? You know, we're just trying all these things out while the period is kind of low, and we can analyze it without focusing so much on other matters.
All right. The other piece I have is you can speak to the what happened with the OCC with being on strike and how it affected service. Yes. Hopefully Friday, and hopefully not that much this weekend, and hopefully right. It's back to normal.
Yes. So what we're going to do, and again, I think it's a practice that we believe in. I just happened to be at the Metro Access Call Center on Friday just for another reason. I just happened to be out there. We had already been preparing for the possibility of a strike. You saw some of you probably read in the news that the union had authorized this strike. And as I was about to pack up and get back on the train to head north, the workers utilized their rights under federal law to stage a strike, a demonstration, a walkout. And that's their right. And Metro has no opinion on that action, what have you. We had been working with the contractor to ensure that, to the greatest extent possible, customer experience would not be impacted whatsoever. And, you know, again, full transparency, for most of the morning and even early afternoon, things were going pretty normal. 2 o'clock, there was a challenge at that time, and that was, you know, right before the peak time. Not on rail, but the peak time in terms of people calling in for reservations. And so before anything happened, I let my boss know what was going on, and I immediately called the leadership of the AAC to make you each aware. And that, in this case, was Phil Posner, chairman, Denise Rush, vice chair. But in the meantime, I addressed her as chair, given Phil's situation. And I attempted to reach you, but we later connected via email. And we provided one update later on that day. And again, for the most part, we were able to absorb the challenge. And later that night, as I wrote to each of you, the employees of MV Transportation and the union representing them announced that the employees would be going back to work. And yes, they came back to work on Saturday and they've been doing a great job. They work Saturday, work Sunday, working today. And we support MV and the union discussing this matter for a good resolution for everyone involved.
All right, we just want to make sure that y'all have something in place if, knock on wood, this happens again, so there's not a major disruption of service, or minimize it if it ever comes to that.
Yes, we believe that there is a continuity of service in place, but again, you know, my old saying is I love everybody and I care about the people who work in the call center. I care about the contractors and mostly I care about the customers. So our focus is always being prepared like good Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, but we want the teams to all be together. And that's what we support. We support all our team members being together and we'll let the companies and their employees work it out, but we encourage teamwork.
All right, thank you. Ms. Williams-Hall, we're going to circle back to you for safety. And with that, I think I said at the AAC meeting, the issue that we had with the concern from the customer about the wheelchair and wheelchair lift, while your staff did explain, you know, what happened with it, how are we doing better with that, hopefully, because that is a safety issue, to address that we minimize or make sure this does not happen again, this type of egregious issue.
So we'll want to be careful with suggesting that it could become more than an isolated incident. All of our vehicles, the wheelchairs are inspected before each trip. An annual certification for each one of the vehicle operators is required every year to make certain that they are certified in performing the wheelchair inspection. So we don't see this as something that needs to needlessly raise any alarm. We believe that we have a good system in place.
Okay.
Yeah. So with regard to safety overall, our COVID-19 safety posture remains the same. Both customers and drivers are still required to use masks despite recent local changes and even some different instruction from the White House. All of our customers and drivers are still required to use masks and social distance as much as possible. So everything remains the same with regard to COVID and safety for Metro Access.
So this, the sort of social distancing and masks will remain in place, at least I would say, okay, I think it was a TSA said they're imposing the federal mandate. Of course, y'all can always extend that as an agency. So I'm presuming this is going to go past that September date in the fall. Y'all still going to require them, or at what point will y'all reconsider things?
Mr. Blake, I'll defer to you on that one.
Yes, that's a very fair and good question. I would say that Metro Access will have the mask mandate at least until we go back to shared rides. And so if we're not in shared rides, that's a symptom or a symbol that things are not totally, totally back to normal. So we would still require the mask mandate. And then even after we go back to shared rides, we'll revisit it. But I would say if we're looking, instead of picking a date in the time in the future, I've never been good at picking dates, either with stocks, a lottery, or anything else. So I don't want to pick a date in time. But I will say that as long as we're not doing shared rides, that's a symbol of the pandemic. And therefore, we will continue to have the mask mandate. Once we move to shared ride, which of course, we'll let the committee know probably at least a month ahead of time when we've decided that we're gonna go to back to shared ride service. But yeah, we need to give customers at least a month because they're gonna have to adjust their pickup times then. We will revisit the mask mandate at that point.
All right, only because this consideration of social distancing and if this whole thing, and obviously with different jurisdictions in the federal government deciding on different rules, y'all obviously have the right, as y'all do, to decide how you want to move things forward safely. given the unique circumstances of our own system and the capacity of our own vans and the size of our own vans in terms of distancing and other health factors.
No, we agree. Yes. So it's you know, a lot of different factors go into it. But again, we'll take all those factors into consideration when deciding to move away from non-shared ride service. So once we move to non-shared ride service, that's when we will revisit the mask mandate on our service.
All right. Any questions from committee members about this particular topic?
Chair Samuelford, this is Anu. Ms. Rush has her hand up.
Go ahead, Ms. Rush.
I want to talk, but it's not about this topic, I guess, in public comment.
Okay, I'll put you down for public comment.
Thank you.
All right. So next, there's no other person. We're going to go to an update, I guess, with the audio, the Metro Access audio recording discussion. So Mr. Blake, you want to start this conversation?
Okay, I'll be real quick because we want to hear from you and Ms. Rush. But yes, so there was a request, you know, Metro Access has installed interior audio and video recording. And we've done that as part of a safety effort that began again long before Blake came around, but it was in response to some very serious incidents that occurred. And we wanted to be very progressive and aggressive in addressing such incidents moving forward. Those solutions of interior audio and video recording, as I pointed out, was strongly supported by the AAC at the time. Once we've installed the devices, however, there was concern raised about privacy. And again, Chris Blake's position per generally accepted guidance in terms of public transportation and public access is that when you're using public transit, you should not have an expectation of privacy. And but members of the AAC, some members of the AAC and some members of the public insisted that they at least be able to hear the recording to see how loud, or to determine, excuse me, how loud they can talk about whatever. I opposed that activity. I didn't find it as necessary. I was overruled by Metro executive management. So today attempted to have the demonstration of the audio, and I will allow Paul Semelfort and Denise Rush to describe their experiences respectively in hearing that audio.
So I guess I'll go first. So it was two of my trips that I picked, one in a sedan and one in a van. And I think one of the one in the van, at least, I hear myself. Well, when I heard the tape, I guess at its loudest, hearing, I heard myself mumble. But I think maybe it's because of wearing a mask and because of the distance between where the driver's sitting and I'm all the way in the back in the van. I hear some tiny piece of conversation, but it's not very audible. I recognize my voice and I recognize the driver's voice, but in terms of the content of the conversation, I could not, you know, pick up exactly what it is. And that was on the van itself. And on the sedan trip, where obviously I am in the back and much closer to the driver, probably less than a feet or two, I was able to audibly hear the ranger making directions. And again, I heard a tiny bit of myself speak and the driver speak, but maybe a little bit, still very low, but difficult to ascertain, but I was able to get a little bit more piece of the conversation, but it was still very low. And it's something I guess I wouldn't be able to hear, at least my opinion, my personal opinion, in earshot, at least with the technology that is used to record. Well, I will say for the both of them, you get clear picture footage. So that is a major improvement. of the entire vehicle and its exterior.
This is Ms. Rush. I didn't hear one word. I didn't hear Paul. I didn't hear the driver, and I didn't hear nothing. So I don't know if, because I'm not there in the room or what, but I didn't hear a word, nothing.
And well, I'm not sure, Ms. Rush, because I'll admit, yeah, for me it was challenging to hear as well, although I was able to decipher some of Paul's conversation. I want to believe that some of what we experienced today was the effort of trying to, trying to broadcast it across a Zoom meeting. Maybe that's what it was, although I've seen videos work just fine on Zoom. So I'm not really sure, but I can tell you that from my experience with other reviewing other video clips, I've been able to hear them a lot better than I heard them today. So out of respect for the decision to give particularly yourself, Ms. Rush, but also the leadership of the AAC, an opportunity to hear a real recording, I'm willing to say that we can call this one preseason, like in the football games, and I'll ask Anu to try again, maybe with the same clips or maybe ask for two different clips. And then she and I will test it out across Zoom prior to the meeting. And if I think it's good to go, then we can try this again at a later time in the month of June prior to the June Metro Access Subcommittee.
Okay. Is it, Pat Sheehan?
Yes, sir.
Question. First, I'm sorry I missed this today. I forgot it. I didn't know. But secondly, would we be doing it without a mask? That would make a difference for me.
Without a mask? Mm. Well, now, when Paul was talking, it was a little mumbo jumbo, not because of Paul, but because he was talking behind the mask.
Right.
If you want to try it, well, right now we can't do it without a mask because it's a mask mandate to be in the vehicle. So, again, the audio that we heard, I don't really believe the problem was because of the mask. Again, the Paul piece that was mumbled, I think, was only mumbled because the audio was so low. And we've got to figure out how to get the audio up. And I think we would have been able to understand Paul quite well. So let us work on the technology side. And again, we will call this one a practice kick in preseason. And we'll come back with the real game, the Super Bowl, sometime in the next few weeks.
All right. That works for me.
Yes, sir. And we'll make sure make sure I knew that the chairman emeritus is scheduled on this thing.
I would make sure that I call before also. Oh,
there you go. You know the secret, I knew. Yes.
No problem.
All right. Thank you. So now we have public comment period. And I already know I have Doris and Denise on the docket, but Anu, of course, I want to find first if there's someone from the public that's already pre-registered on top of these two, who I will do first if you have one on the list, and then I'll follow with Doris and Denise.
Yes, so I can tell you the order. It was Denise Rush and then Ansel Torres and, Doris Ray, Ansel Torres and Denise Rush. That's the order I got them in.
Okay, so Ansel Torres, Doris Ray, and Denise Rush. So we'll go with that. All right, Mr. Torres?
Yes, hello?
Yes, go ahead. And then after Ansel Torres will be Doris Ray, and then after Doris Ray will be Denise Rush.
Okay. I'm usually very much a critic of WMATA and DAS. But it's all for the better, I think. But today what I'd like to do is to compliment Das, Mr. Blake, WMATA, for this Uber Flexi Ride option. In my mind, I think it is the promised land of Metro Access. Whether we get there with Uber or we get there in some other configuration, to me, it doesn't really matter. Because WMATA should be about service And you know, and full stop. I mean, nothing more than that. And if we can have, if we are able to replicate a system or establish a system that makes it as convenient as possible for the person, for the user to get to and from a given destination, you know, without, you know, breaking the bank or getting out of the laws that describe the service or that shape the service, I think we should do that. You know, there's definitely funding there from what I've seen for paratransit service. But I believe that the contract services that we're using, I believe they are far more expensive than the Uber alternatives. In the calculations that I've done, it's substantially smaller. So I definitely think that efforts should be made to find ways around these humongous contracts that cost a lot of money, but yet deliver a lower quality of service than an abilities ride type service. Not that I'm saying that abilities ride should be the model, but this flexible Uber thing that Mr. Blake is doing now, having that part of the Metro Access program fully integrated, not in the abilities ride model, I think that really should be the future. Regarding the issue with the flat fare, I fully understand what the, I think it's her name is Ms. Fisher, was saying. And I would recommend for that, simply have the flat fare be the lowest current fare, which is a change in my position, which was calling for no fare, like it is in some places, at least on public transportation anyway, where public transportation is free. Or even the New York City model, $2.75 to go anywhere in New York City. There's nothing wrong with that. Boston does a similar thing. So that's why this whole $4 and $6 and $6.50 for taking paratransit still is incomprehensible to me. I believe that the fare calculator is broken and should not be fixed because it never worked, it never will work, and it will always be a headache to WMATA and the passengers who have to pay the prices that the fare calculator came up with. I think it is it's an absolute disgrace that this thing was even given an award, because it is not serving the best interests of the disabled community. And that should have been pointed out a long time ago. I am no genius, but yet in my first serious analysis of the fare calculator, I could see that the thing was broken. So I'm sure there are a lot more smarter people than me looking at this, and they couldn't see this. It boggles the mind. The no PCA on sedans policy, I'd like to get a better understanding of that. Why is it that there's no PCA on sedans? If this service is to provide disabled passengers with a service, denying them of the PCA that they may need to use, I believe, I'm not sure of even the legality of that. Is that even allowed? I can't imagine how that would be possible. Is that based on the fact that there is the policy based on a COVID issue? Or is it based on the sedan is too small issue, where it's difficult to have a passenger sit behind a driver who may be uncomfortable because there's just not enough space for him or her to roll back? I mean, what is it actually based on? Is it a COVID issue, or is it simply a space in the sedan issue?
So with that, I'm going to let Mr. Blake respond to that, and then we're going next with Doris Ray and then Denise Rush after his response.
Yeah, so let's start with, we got to clarify the language. No one's being denied anything. because no one's guaranteed a ride on a particular type of vehicle. In fact, I saw Mr. Goldstein on here, and if any of you have any opportunities, you can hear he puts out a nice newsletter each month, and is certainly critical of WMATA or anyone who's not doing the right thing. But this month, he just showed where the FTA reiterated that passenger choice is not a right. I'm bringing passenger choice to Metro Access because I care about the passengers, and we want to try to do our best to accommodate all requests. But even in my declaration of passenger vehicle choice, I never said it was guaranteed. I said we would do our best. So now to the specific issue at hand, we are using science and the studies of ventilation and the most opportune ventilation to protect passengers in vehicles, in sedan vehicles, from airborne virus. So yes, this is a purely COVID-19 policy change that we've made, and it's to have one passenger in the vehicle at a time. So anyone who's traveling with a PCA, nobody's saying you can't bring a PCA or deny your PCA. If you're traveling in which there's going to be more than one passenger in the vehicle, we're going to put you on a van. If you're traveling by yourself, whether you generally use a PCA or not, you may, and it's not even guaranteed in that case, but you may be placed in a sedan. And again, studies from actual scientists with their PhDs and MDs in terms of the ventilation of the vehicles, while we want all windows to be open to the greatest extent possible in which the driver and the passenger can tolerate the air coming in, we absolutely want the front passenger seat window and the rear passenger seat behind the driver. We want those windows to be open as much as humanly possible, given weather conditions, the thrust of the air coming into the vehicle, because according to science, that is the best way to protect the driver and the customer from each other, in addition to wearing masks. So at this point in time, until the COVID, again, just like we're talking about with the mask mandate, once we move to shared ride service, then the one passenger per sedan policy and practice will be lifted. But again, there is no guarantee of the vehicle a person gets to transport. And your civil rights, the federal civil rights law, guarantees you accessible transportation if you have a disability that prevents you from using fixed route services. And that's what Metro Access is providing. The vehicle we put you in is totally, totally the decision of the transportation provider. However, again, Chris Blake is saying, once we bring all these sedans in, we want to hear what you prefer, and we're going to try to accommodate what you prefer because we care about our passengers, but it's not a guarantee.
No, Mr. Blake, I don't think you got what I was saying. All I was just getting is an understanding as to why, the policy was implemented. Was it simply COVID-driven, or was it because there's some drivers that didn't that had long legs or whatever, or needed to push back? It had nothing to do with the driver. It had nothing to do with the driver.
Nothing to do with the driver. This is pure science. It's a doctor I've been studying.
Right. No, that's all I. That's,
and it's all about ventilation.
No. You gave me more than an explanation I was looking for. It was just a simple question as to why the policy was it a driver or was it COVID?
And that's all. And can I just add one last thing? I know we have several callers, and I'm gonna be real quick about this. But even when Mr. Torres gives us a great compliment, I've got to disagree with him just because that's what we've come to. He and I just got to disagree. So I really appreciate, but no, seriously, I appreciate your points on the flex ride and abilities ride. But just to show you how I've changed, and I know Robbie was at the initial abilities ride pre-proposal conference when I got up and said to the potential vendors, you guys can have every single Metro Access trip. Well, that sounded good, and that's what my role was to do, because back then I was in the role of Carol Lopez, and
And I was there too.
You were there too. Okay, when you heard that, and ironically, Mr. Kent jumped up and said, hold up. Let's slow the roll here. You know, I was being a little over the top with it, but it was to encourage people to propose and get involved in this opportunity. But I've got to stand up for the Metro Access service delivery providers, much like Mr. Kent did that day, because I just want to say, yes, Abilities Ride is here, it's here to stay, and we're going to make it work and we're going to make it better. So what Mr. Torres said is absolutely right. However, when we start talking about money, we have to be real careful, because while Abilities Ride Flex Trip sounds good, the fact of the matter is, if there are no drivers on the street at that moment, you know, Uber could tell you, hey, we don't have no drivers available. Sorry, call us back in 40 minutes. Call us back tomorrow morning. They can do that. Metro Access cannot. So when we talk about the cost differences between Abilities Ride and paratransit, with paratransit, I'm not paying Robbie and the other great service delivery providers we have for their ability to provide a trip, as much as I'm paying to ensure that they're there per the federal law when you need a trip. So we're going to give you these other alternatives and options, but they don't guarantee you anything other than to be good stewards and people who care about folks with accessibility. Otherwise, I'll take them off the program in a heartbeat. But the service delivery providers, there is a price we're paying, and a lot of that price is to make sure that when Ansel Torres, Pat Sheehan, Denise Rush, or anybody absolutely needs a trip, we know they're there to provide you your civil right access to public transportation service. These other companies, and I'm working with them, and they're all doing a great job for the most part, and having Mr. Torres give them compliments, that's one big thumbs up. I mean, because he's as critical as can be, and that's a good thing as a consumer. But believe me, they are no replacement, and you do not want your civil rights to rely on these companies under an Abilities Ride program. Your civil rights are protected by the Robbie Werfs and the Conrad Marshalls and the Mr. Bates and the Mr. Mohibis of the world under the contract they have with WMATA. And I appreciate their work, and they're doing what we need them to do, while I also provide customers some alternatives at the same time. Just wanted to throw that in there. Thank you for your time, though.
Thank you. So next we have Doris Ray, followed by Denise Rush. Go ahead, Doris.
Hi.
Thank you for your patience.
Hello?
Go ahead, Doris.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So this was a follow-up to the discussions about the fixed fare. And that, what I wanted to make sure that we all understood, although we've talked about this before, but before some people have been with the committee or come to committee, and that is that asking for fixed fare a flat fare of twice the bus fare currently in effect. Asking for that as a flat fare is fine, but we need to remember two things. One is that if that's what we're using as the basis, whenever the fixed route, the bus service, has a fare increase, there will be a Metro Access fare increase, unless we're advocating that the flat fare stay at $4 or whatever. So it's going to be fluid anyway. And then the second thing is that the law, the ADA, that established what a transit authority like WMATA can charge at the maximum, the ceiling for ADA paratransit, ergo Metro Access, is no more than twice the fixed route fare, and it can be less. And as Sona has pointed out, it can be a flat fare that's less than twice the fixed route. It can be 100% rather than 200% of the fixed route fare. It could be half of that. It could be no fare at all. But everything's driven for the Walmart aboard by how much it's going to cost all of us, because the operating cost for Metro Access, Metro Rail, and Metro Bus are our taxes at the local level. So that's what I wanted to say. In other words, no matter how we cut it, it's still going to be a fluid fare one way or the other. But it could be less. And we've always had the right to advocate that it be the same prices as the fixed route users, or even less than that. So that's what I wanted to make sure to say. And the other thing that I wanted to say as a follow-up is about the audio on the Metro Access vehicles and such. Because I was trained as an audiologist, I just want to say that the thing is, the volume has to adjust to whatever the ambient noise is inside the vehicle. And the ambient noise inside the vehicle also includes what you can hear coming through from traffic on the outside and all the noise inside the bus. So you may have to put the volume up beyond some recommendation that doesn't take into account all the ambient noise on the bus, or it may be impossible to get to fully hear everything. That's all I had to say.
Thank you, Doris. Next is Denise Rush.
Okay. First, I want to commend Mr. Blake on promptly notifying us of the Wildcat strike when it occurred, because you know we're going to hear it sooner or later. Then I want to say that the program that you were talking about that you've been using with Uber has been out about a month or so, and I've gotten a couple of calls about it, and I didn't talk to the person. I said, I don't know what you're talking about, because you had not informed the leadership that you were even, you know, just putting something out on the street. So today you did acknowledge that, and I was going to wait. I said, I'm going to wait until he tells us. I'm not going to call him. I'm not going to ask him anything, and I don't care how many calls I get. But thank you for notifying us today, not as promptly as you did with the strike. Also, as you know, I got a call today from a client about a trip, and the driver didn't want her to sit in a particular seat on the bus. There's nobody else on the bus, and he wanted her to sit in the back, which would hurt her back. I do not understand why a driver would not want her to sit anywhere on the bus that would not hurt her back. I heard the driver, and he was rude. And she spent a lot of time not moving because he said she was a problem. After Mr. Blake called Miss Anderson, or everybody got involved, he ended up driving her. I hope that you further investigate this situation, because he may have just had a bad day, but he was rude. Hello?
I'm sorry, yeah. I was trying to get off. No, you're right, and we've talked about this, so I will say again for the record, customers have a right to sit in the most comfortable of seats in the van. So yes, we want the customers furthest away to promote social distancing, But in the vans, because the seats are different, they are not required to sit in a particular seat. And we have, well, let me just make sure, because I just said some nice things about all of our service delivery providers. Now, Mr. Marshall, you're from TransDev Incorporated. The driver in question is one of your employees. Do you have any updates you can provide to us as to, one, what was that driver's misunderstanding of the right of the passenger to sit in the seat, as well as Ms. Rush's ear witness testimony as to how she felt he was talking to the passenger?
Good evening, everybody. And I'm definitely apologizing for the driver's not allowing the passenger to choose the seat of her choice. That is definitely what we tell our operators needs to happen daily. I didn't get a chance to speak to this operator before I got on the call because he was still on the road, but we will, my operations manager, Adrian Jones, did speak to him, and he did got him to understand what he needed to do, and he went back and got the passenger.
Now, once he wasn't moving, I talked to her, I talked to Ms. Anderson, time still passing. Once he was instructed, I guess by Ms. Anderson, to take her to her location, I personally felt that he should have apologized to her. And that's just my personal opinion, and drive her. But I called her, and she said, no, he didn't apologize. He's not saying anything. At the tone that he was talking to her, he needs to apologize.
And unfortunately, Ms. Rush, these are unionized employees. I will have a conversation with this operator, but I can't make him apologize.
Make him. But, yeah, but, I know. I'm just saying.
But I know. But you know how some folks are raised differently than others. And this is not, and I think you hit the nail on the head earlier when you said he might have been having a bad day. Because
he might have had a bad day even before.
It's not a problematic operator. It's not.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to put it to. But you still, he owes, he might not never apologize, but he should. Also, have we got applications for members to get on the AAC, and also the new members that we have had, they've never been to the OCC office, and maybe if we ever get out of Zoom and back in a location, will we be going to the OCC to see how it's operated? Because the member, we haven't been in 3 or 4 years.
So the answer is yes. We will be taking another field trip to the Operations Control Center at some point in the future. But as you alluded to, we're in social distancing. And even when things get back to normal, it's probably going to be a while before we're so normal that we would want to take such a field trip, as we used to call them. But no, it's definitely gonna happen, but when, I can't tell you at the moment.
And do we have any people applying for the open positions? And yes. Could you refresh my memory on what positions are open? I mean, what states?
Yes, Anu, I'll turn that over to you. Yes.
Oh, but before Anu answers, I do want to just dovetail as we get back to drivers in the seats. Like I reiterated before several meetings, when I get on the van, this is me personally, drivers have flipped up out of, if it's a, that four seat, vehicle, the newer ones, they flip up three of the seats kind of saying, giving the suggestions, this is the seat you sit in. So as I say, again, as I look at the service providers, a lot of the drivers are doing a great job. However, it just, it gives the impression that, this is the only seat I'm going to sit in the most furthest back. I'm just saying that. But go ahead, Nanu.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Rush, so we are looking forward to receiving applications, and we have from Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia. In Northern Virginia, we would really want to have some applications from Fairfax County residents.
Thank you.
How many positions are open? This is Ansel.
Mr. Torres, one from Washington, D.C., and two from Virginia.
Fairfax is, you said, two from
Fairfax County, correct, yes.
Okay. I knew. This is Darnice. Does it say which ward in D.C.?
I'm sorry, Ms. Bush, could you?
Does it indicate which ward in Washington, D.C.? Or it doesn't matter?
No, just a D.C. resident.
Okay.
But in theory, my understanding is they would like to have a balance of people from different areas of D.C., if that's possible.
If that's possible, and again, as you all know, we do look at the applicants with different disabilities. It's not just.
It's one of the factors.
Well, I don't want to teach the choir.
It's multiple factors, but they look at geographical balance across the city, disability, gender, all those factors mixed together to create a diverse group of six. And with that, if there's no any other comments or questions, I'd like to put a motion for adjournment.
This is Donnie. So I have one comment.
Okay, go ahead.
It's pertaining to the seats. Usually when you get on there, the drivers are very cooperative. As you say, they have the seats up and you just tell them which seat you want to sit in. Mm-hmm. And if they have a problem, I've only had a problem one time and I asked them to call in. And they did that. But other than that, most of the drivers just, allow you to sit in whatever seat you want.
Thank you for that comment.
Chair Summerford, before you adjourn, I just want to state that anybody looking to send in their public comments can either call at 202-962-1100, leave a message, or email us at metroaacchair@wmata.com, and they can send their emails, their public comments via emails as well. Thank you.
And with that, we're going to take a motion for adjournment.
So moved, Darnice.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye. Nays, abstentions, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Paul.
Great job, good everybody. Meeting. Good night. Take care.
Thank you. Bye. Have a great week, everyone.